this hour, folks, and in the next, here's what we're going to be doing. We are going to be taking a closer look into the political deaths, as well as taking your phone calls in the next hour at 844-769-2944. Hold off on calling until we get into the next hour or right before the next hour on this end-of-the-week edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Gotta take this, and you have to understand we are in a banana republic right now under the care of Barry Satoru, the putative president of the United States, who we were told by conservatives even not to worry about his origins. You know, we just ought to address the issues, not go into the unnecessary conspiratorial origins. Well, Barry Satoru, as it turns out, hey, he's a Muslim. If not, he certainly will do as a Muslim, because he's decided in favor of the Muslims every step of the way. And yet, of course, you know, we were told not to take a closer look at that. Well, we're going to be taking a closer look tonight at the murders, the suspicious deaths, as we opened tonight's program with the introduction to this topic. Now we're going to take a closer look. Seth Rich, know him? May he rest in peace. Yeah. Go ahead and do a search, folks, on Seth Rich. Go ahead. What do you find? Well, I think you'll find that Seth Rich is a man who, Joe, he worked for the, well, DNC, did he not?
He worked for the DNC.
All right. Let's start with him and work backwards. All right. Because, folks, what we're seeing here is the incremental or the systematic, not incremental, the systematic eradication of troublemakers. And if you don't think that we can get on that list, or that Alex Jones can, you know, isn't on that list, And I might, Joe, I didn't tell you this. I might be on with Alex next Tuesday. I'm not sure.
You mentioned something.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I might be on with Alex Jones on InfoWars next Tuesday. But I think I'm not 100%. But anyway. But having said that, Seth Rich,
he worked as a voter expansionist data director for the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I believe, 27 years old, and he has been named by Assange of WikiLeaks as the DNC WikiLeaks source that has been linked to the email.
And that's
of 20,000 emails, which is an article we covered last segment, talked about, you know, the U.S. going after Russia for the alleged leaked information. But Seth Conrad Rich was shot several times in the back a block away from his home in D.C., in a D.C. neighborhood of Bloomingdale. The police declared it a robbery gone bad, but nothing had been taken. Seth still had his wallet, watch, and cell phone.
Right.
And they go on to say that, you know, he had ties to the WikiLeaks dump of 20,000 DNC emails, which proved the DNC was rigging the primaries to favor Hillary Clinton and subvert the Sanders, Bernie Sanders, basically stealing the primary for Clinton. The scandal forced DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz to resign. And although Hillary's people tried to portray this as a hack by Russia to cast Hillary as a victim of international intrigue and espionage, WikiLeaks was not identified, while not identifying the leak, denied it was Russia, and since has identified the leak as Mr. Seth Rich.
And, you know,
this would be a motive.
Right. The pushback on this, and I find the pushback is equally interesting, Joe, about this. When we did investigations, and when I did the equivocal death analyses and investigations, we get, when pushback happens, especially pushback from family members, you have to take a look very carefully at the reasons for that. Now, family members, you've got to be very judicious when dealing with family members, and in this case is no different. The family says, hey, this was not, don't politicize my son's murder. Okay.
Well, first the father came out and said, you know, well, we talked about that there was no, if it was a robbery, you know, they failed because his wallet was not taken. His credit cards were still there. His watch was still there. It was reported that he had bruises to his knees and his face and his hands.
Yes, there was evidence of a scuffle, according to the police report.
There's also a $25,000 reward from the local police, as well as a $20,000 reward being issued by WikiLeaks. And this all happened on July 10th at 4:19 a.m. He was shot and killed in the back, shot multiple times.
Well, at least twice.
Walking back to his home.
Yeah.
And some say he was about to, that morning he was supposed to be or meet with the FBI in order to speak to special agents about an ongoing court case possibly involving the Clinton family or the email leaks. Now, that's not confirmed. That's just speculation. But regardless, this is an interesting case because this is one of many who've died in the last month. And we can move on to the,
well,
another one, that Joe Montaigne, who was killed, just a few weeks after, Seth Rich was killed on July 10th. He was killed on July 25th, supposedly died of a heart attack right after the WikiLeaks email dump, proving the DNC had worked to sabotage Bernie Sanders and hand the nomination to Hillary Clinton. Joe was 47 with no history of heart problems. So, you know, there's not so much of a question if it was murder or not, or it is, but
right.
It looks to be of natural causes. But if you go back into the Clintons and their body of work in Arkansas, you can see that they had, doctors and medical examiners, either they were the worst medical examiners in the history of the profession, or they were doing a job of covering up crimes, specifically when saying somebody died of natural causes when their head was cut off and found, you know, blocks away in a garbage,
right.
Or an ulcer when somebody was shot in the head three times. But what's interesting about this is Joe Montano was the chairman of the DNC right before Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and he was also the regional director for Tim Kaine, the vice presidential candidate.
And I just want to remind people to the opening segment. What we're talking about here is we are talking about reasonable research or research being conducted on these suspicious deaths that is consistent with conducting what we've done in the past, known as equivocal death analysis.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, for an equivocal death analysis, an investigator or a consultant or an analyst, and this is always the case, must have complete and unfettered access to the entire police file, the evidence, all the entirety of the evidence, including photographs, sketches, witness reports, and such, for a legitimate equivocal death analysis or investigation to be done. And what is an equivocal death investigation? Well, think of it this way. The most common would be murder versus suicide. Okay. For example, and this is used in the textbooks and the investigative handbooks, for example. And maybe this is more than you want to know, but I think it's important to, when you talk about something like this, that you talk about this in an informed fashion. For example, you know, what is the manner of death? There are cases that investigators are tasked to determine between homicide and suicide, accident and suicide, homicide and accident. And a very, very prolific author, Vernon Gaberth, a foremost authority on homicide investigation, makes a very profound statement that suicide, for example, can cause more problems for detectives than homicides. But that said, a correct determination as to the manner, not the cause, but the manner of death must be made. I mean, people, their careers depend on it. Family members need to know the truth in order to achieve closure, to reach a point of acceptance, to move on. For example, it may involve a financial issue. Our legal system depends on it. At least at one time it did. But it's often, for example, you know, if someone shoots themselves in the head, then it's a suicide. The Vince Foster case, for example, a prime example of an equivocal death investigation, or one where an equivocal death research analysis should be done, is, but was never done. Investigators did not do that. You know, certainly they verified that the cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head, but the manner in which the death was, or the manner of death was not established. Therefore, we have this gray area. So we are using the template of an equivocal death investigation and analysis minus the police file, but under the color, or under the our experience, our collective and individual experience as career investigators. And I think that we can do a pretty good job based on our experience, but certainly we cannot, it will not rise to that level of investigation I referenced earlier. So anyway, you were saying about so we had two now. In fact, there were a total of five most recent deaths,
mm-hmm.
Of the that are related to DNC, Clinton, and Seth Rich was one of the more recent, and certainly one of the more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
This occurred, by the way, in an area of Washington, rather upscale area, and as you said, the potential motive here was to silence him, as he was. What was the reason?
He was the leak to WikiLeaks, as according to Julian Assange.
Okay.
And we talked about Joe Montana. While there's no evidence that the murder happened, he was somebody who had died within the last few weeks and was tied to the... he was DNC chair before Wasserman Schultz.
Yes.
And was tied to the WikiLeaks as well. Also, moving on, another person who died just this August, Sean Lucas, an attorney.
Yes.
He served the DNC Services Corporation and chairperson Debbie Wasserman Schultz at DNC headquarters in Washington, D.C. in the fraud class action lawsuit against Democratic Party on behalf of Bernie Sanders supporters. This is before WikiLeaks released documents proving the DNC was working against the Sanders campaign during the 2016 primary. Sean was found dead by his girlfriend. No cause of death has been officially released. Now, that's three people tied to WikiLeaks, tied to the DNC, that have died. Right. One violently. The other two, one, they said it was a heart attack with no history of heart problems, and this one, no cause of death has been officially released. But the timings are very questionable. And what these people were up to shows they were actively working against the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee, especially Sean Lucas as an attorney suing them on behalf of a class action lawsuit with proving the DNC was working against Bernie Sanders' campaign during the 2016 primary. Now, if you think about that, that's like somebody having proof that the RNC was working and is working against Donald Trump during those times when they're supposed to be helping and making sure it's a fair and legal contest. They were making sure Hillary Clinton got the nomination and not Bernie Sanders. See, yeah. Like Trump, Bernie Sanders had lots of grassroots support. He was filling up venues and rallies when Hillary Clinton couldn't. He won, you know, a majority of states, and Clinton got the delegates. It was all set up from the beginning for Hillary to win the nomination. And that's not a secret anymore. And, you know, the media won't talk about it. They won't talk about the stolen primary, which could lead to the stolen general election this November, which I heard Sean Hannity today said it's only 88 days away until the election.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah, it'll go by fast.
Excuse me. Now, well, so many different individuals that are in this death pool. one person in particular that caught my attention as I was doing the investigation and research. I don't know how many people have heard of Steve Bridges. When we were talking about Obama specifically, Steve Bridges, comedian impersonator, a guy who impersonated Obama. He actually offended Obama. During one of his bits, he played George Bush, he played Obama, he played Clinton, he played Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did a lot of different things. The reason I find this interesting, back in 2011, he you can find this on YouTube, where he does this Obama bit. Now, what caught my attention is he apparently died of natural causes. That, at least it was said, initially. But on the Steve Bridges website right after his death, and he was listed too as a George W. Bush impersonator. I guess that was like his big thing, but Obama as well. The timing, of course, is a little bit weird. Given the fact that he died right after making fun of Obama in 2012. But on his website, it lists his death as related to anaphylactic shock. That anaphylactic shock has been used. Now, that would be due to some severe allergic reaction to something. A very common element. Peanut butter, for example. If you've got a peanut allergy and someone gives you, I don't know, something with peanut butter in it or peanuts in it, you want to see some nasty things happen, boy. Watch one of those. But there was no clear-cut cause of death on this. And this guy had access to a lot of access to the White House back from 2003 to 2012. I'm just saying that this guy in particular bothers me, all right, as an investigator. You might say, well, you know, being an impersonator really doesn't mean much. And offending someone by what, you know, by saying something or by doing an act doesn't mean much. But there's something to this that transcends administrations or transcends regimes. And because of his proximity and access to the White House, I have a problem with this and how the cause of death, in my personal opinion, was given. So, just saying. And again, Steve Bridges. If you have another one, because there are so many here that if you have another one that you want to get into, I think we need to keep this going. Lucas, of course. We spoke about Lucas. That was really strange too, Joe. This Sanders supporter who served papers at the DNC on the fraud case found dead. And you can see the video of him actually serving the papers. This guy was an attorney. July 3rd, 2016. Sean Lucas and filmmaker Ricardo Villalba served DNC services and subserved Schultz, Debbie Wasserman, as you indicated, in Washington, D.C., in the fraud case against Bernie Sanders on behalf of the Sanders supporters. In fact, they did a live YouTube broadcast that day. It was July 3rd, yes, on 2016. Well, when did he die? You said August? I think it was...
August 2nd?
Yeah, I was just looking here at my notes. August 4th. According to, well, Snopes has, Snopes is the website owned by the husband and wife team that's funded through by George Soros. And if you look at a lot of these death cases, Snopes gets right in there and they're very quick to dispel any rumors. Apparently Snopes had, poo-pooed the idea that there was anything strange about his death. And, of course, you know, this following the death of Seth Conrad Rich on July 8th, a little bit disturbing. And of course, well, don't forget John Ash. I think we need to talk about this because we, didn't Ted or someone, we referenced John Ash.
Yeah, we talked about him. Before.
He was, a week before he was scheduled to testify against the Clintons and the Democratic Party, John Ash supposedly dropped the barbell on his neck. And the reason I mentioned Snopes earlier is because, you know, once more, Snopes had come out and said, well, wait a minute, this is not, he was not really scheduled, at least not in that context, to testify. Well, sure enough, he was. So, John Ash, June 22nd, 2016, former UN official John Ash accidentally crushed his own throat and died a week before he was scheduled to testify against the Clintons and the Democratic Party. Snopes, of course, saying no, no. And then Seth Conrad Rich, and of course, Sean Lucas.
And John Ash died on June 22nd, 2016, and they initially reported it as being a heart attack, but his throat had been crushed, and as you said, they talked, said it was, he dropped the barbell on his own throat, which crushed his larynx, and, but he was about to begin a trial for a bribery charge involving Clinton businessman, Mr. Tseng, who had been implicated but not charged in the 1996 ChinaGate scandal for funding illegal donations to Bill and Hillary re-election fund through Arkansas restaurant owner Charlie Tree. Ash was supposed to testify about Hillary's links to Mr. Tseng later that same day he died.
Now, I want to back up a little bit because we're talking about Obama-era deaths in the in Lucas in particular, Ash in particular, Rich. And I strayed a bit with Steve Bridges, but something about Bridges bothers me as an investigator. But what about Obama's grandmother? Folks, 2 days before the general election, you remember this. Obama stopped cold, didn't he? He stopped cold in campaigning at a critical moment to fly out to see grandma. And boy, was he lucky. Madeline Payne Durham was alive 2 days before the general election. He flew to Hawaii to see her for an hour. She passed away. By the way, he flew there alone, or he was there with her alone. She was immediately cremated, and her ashes were scattered in the wind. Now, some say that she was sick, and obviously she was. But again, we're looking at, in the best of, in the most truest sense, an equivocal death investigation to establish the manner of death, not the cause of death, but the manner of death. I would say Beverly, or Madeline Payne Dunham counts as one of the curious deaths related to Obama. And of course, you know, you've got the more obvious, we don't have to get into this, but LaVoy Finicum.
You got Justice Scalia.
Yep. Loretta Fuddy, too. This is extremely important. And we spend a lot of time, Hagman Reports spent a lot of time, and I've written about Loretta Fuddy. Folks, perhaps one of the most important deaths surrounding Obama is Loretta Fudy. And those of you who don't know who she was the gatekeeper for the certificate of live birth for Barry Satoru / Barack Hussein Obama. When Obama had to turn over his long-form birth certificate, she was the custodian of record, clerk of records, who handled his birth certificate. She was at the center of controversy in that long-form birth certificate controversy. You remember that, right? I mean, so we have to understand the significance of this health director who approved Obama, who granted this exception to Barack Obama, who witnessed the copying of Obama's birth certificate and attested to its authenticity. She flies in on a regular scheduled private flight, 9 people aboard, and she's the only one to die. It wasn't a plane crash. It was a water landing. Much more about the deaths, including Vince Foster as one, Loretta Fudy as another, and many others as we connect some dots right here on the Hagmann Report.
We're talking about the political body count, the staggering amount of deaths that surround the top politicians in America. From the current administration, back through the Clinton body count, and other suspicious deaths that continue to pop up, and old ones we continue to cover. Loretta Fudy was one that you mentioned just before the break.
You know, and you
and
can
this
go.
This is one we spent a considerable amount of time on with guests and talked about this in detail.
Yeah.
We continue to receive information about this.
This is one thing where the audience really came through for us. We had we spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get copies of Butter DeZillion did, got copies of related documents about the plane crash, which really wasn't a crash at all. It was a soft water landing. If you go to CanadaFreePress.com and just type in Loretta Fudy, F-U-D-D-Y, my articles will pop up. And, you know, she was, again, the director of the Hawaii Department of Health. She reportedly died due to injuries received. Well, actually, it was a heart attack. Shortly before 4 o'clock p.m. local time on December 11th, 2013. Now, for those interested in numbers, in the significance, occult significance of numbers, those numbers are interesting in and of themselves. Now, she was one of 9 people, including the pilot, in the plane, and the only person to succumb to her injuries, which was actually a heart attack. The controversy surrounding her death is incredible. I've never seen anything like this. The NTSB chair, there was a conflict of interest with the NTSB chair in this case. The NTSB allowed the evidence in this case to be contaminated. The NTSB found the Cessna 208 engine failure, that was the cause of this plane, you know, having to land in the water. They don't fail. There's only 2 cases in the previous 34 years of such engine failures and they were 50 days apart, 25 miles apart of one another. And Obama's NTSB, never treated the area as a crime scene, which you do initially until everything else is ruled out. And it's also interesting, too, that there's a lot of controversy, and this is based on my opinion only, my professional opinion only, about the pilot, Clyde Kawasaki, who was shuttling Loretta Fuddy and others. And by the way, the entire accident, takedown, or the landing of the plane in the water and the people in the water was videotaped on not one, but two GoPro cameras. Don't you know? By someone in the back of the plane. Now, we had talked about this in great detail. We had individuals on, including Butter D. Zillion, on this program. Butter D. Zillion is a pseudonym, internet name for someone, a researcher who did a lot of great research. The small aircraft seems to be kind of a dangerous thing to be flying, which brings me to John F. Kennedy Jr. Why is his death suspicious? Anyone? Anyone? Studio audience, why is the death of John F. Kennedy Jr. strange? Well, doesn't this go to Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton? Isn't she involved in this? Jump in any time, Joe, if you want to talk about John F. Kennedy Jr. and his wife and his family going down.
Yeah, and this is one that we have mentioned before. Mm-hmm. The timing was very suspicious, as apparently he was going to run, I believe, against Hillary Clinton in the Senate race. But interestingly enough, there was... the plane went down, and he was an experienced pilot, Kennedy Jr. was, and him and his family died in this plane crash at Martha's Vineyard. There was going to be NBC Dateline report, as well as a Newsweek issue magazine. The story is saying as much, that he was going to run for the seat against Hillary Clinton. They were both pulled and from the distributors and destroyed. And it goes on to say here, even before the wreckage of the plane had been found, the media was saturated with news stories declaring the weather to have been very hazy.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't tell up from down.
But they said that there was all skies were clear at Martha's Vineyard, up to 8 miles in visibility. And they said that the reports went on to say that the weather made it impossible for JFK Jr. to know which way was up, even though he had working instruments in the aircraft. And it goes on to state and refer to TWA 800. It says, as was the case when TWA 800 was shot down, the United States Navy took control of the crash site, ordering an unprecedented five-mile-wide no-fly zone while the wreckage of the aircraft was recovered and taken to a military base. And it goes on to say that there was false information planted about John F. Kennedy Jr. in the media in the immediate days following the plane crash.
Yes.
And the feeding of this false information to the press proves there was some kind of cover-up, the existence of the cover-up, why JFK Jr. gets an entry on the list here. And there was also reports that his wife was pregnant at the time.
Yeah. And believe it or not, there are certain dates, and you can ask Russ, there are certain dates that are more important than others in the satanic calendar. Check the dates of these deaths, especially if a person is known to be pregnant, is a female known to be pregnant. Always check the dates to see if they fall in line with the beliefs of the Satanists and the important days of sacrifice on the satanic calendar. Do that.
This next one, Ron Brown, I wanted to talk about this. He was the former chairman of the DNC, as well as the Commerce Secretary. Right. He died along with 39 other people in a plane crash in Bosnia while approaching an airport. He was on the verge of being indicted and having stated publicly already his willingness to make a deal with prosecutors. Ron Brown's death brought to an end of his ability to testify. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The very next day, Ron Brown's personal lawyer was murdered in a drive-by shooting, and a few days later, the air traffic controller who had been in charge during the airplane crash was found dead of an apparent suicide.
Right. And see, we go beyond what, I mean, people will mention Ron Brown, but we go beyond that and look one or two or three steps ahead and behind and around. There you have, in that particular case, some very interesting, and in that crash, Ron Brown's Body, is a great book to get, but in that crash, there was at least one other survivor to that crash. It was a female, taken to the hospital, dead before she got to the hospital. And as you mentioned as well, a bullet hole in the top around Ron Brown's head. Perhaps. Possibly. Interestingly enough.
Yeah. I want to hit this one next because I kind of remember this. Mary Mahoney.
Yeah, now we got to be really. Okay, when you. Mary Mahoney. I went to that Starbucks. I was physically in that Starbucks where she worked in Washington, D.C. the year, about 7 months before that murder took place. And the reason I think that's important is because this is a Starbucks where people like Stephanopoulos or Snuffleupagus, what's his name? George Snuffleupagus.
Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, I know. And others had frequented.
Now,
go on.
Mary Maloney was a White House intern, and it came out that during the Paula Jones lawsuit that there was a White House staffer with the initials M that was about to go public with her story of sexual harassment. Now, we know Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
Public.
Yes.
She had
Monica.
The initial M, but this Mary Mahoney also had two initials M. Well, she was gunned down at a Starbucks. And what's interesting about this, she was gunned down with two associates after the Starbucks closed. An hour or two after the Starbucks closed, she was shot 5 times in her chest, face, and in the back of the head. As well as her two other coworkers were killed as well, and the investigators said there was no sign of forcible entry, which means that Mary or either one of the other employees let the killers in, and that means that they knew one of the whoever let whichever
and the,
worker
and the door
let somebody
was
in
on the way out.
Yeah, and that's just it. The somebody actually confessed to this murder and then recanted of the confession, but. That's another thing that was interesting here. To the two big points was, one, she was shot 5 times, and it goes on to say somebody wanted her very dead, and two, that there was $4,000 in the register, and there was no robbery, no attempt to take the money, and it was a triple murder. The police said it was robbery, even though there was execution-style killings, and that one... report said that the Starbucks was still locked when the bodies were
yes.
found the next morning. Robbers don't bother locking doors.
And I'm very troubled by Mary's murder as well as the murder of the others, because this ties into an entirely broader investigation that does involve both Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch, the Yak Clinton, as well as Billy Bob Clinton, or Bill Clinton. There's this intimidation, this attempt to silence witnesses, and effectively silencing witnesses that extend and overlap from Clinton to Obama. You know, you want to connect some dots here, as we do. You've got the interns leaking information. Or the interns, including this young lady, about the activities of Barack Hussein Obama Barry Satoru. But what about those on the outside coming in? I speak of, in this case, Lieutenant Quarles Harris. Now, Lieutenant is not a rank. It is a name given. It's a given name of this young black man, 24 years old. And I actually have done a lot of investigation on this, as well as I've spoken to Pastor or Reverend David Manning, James David Manning, about this. There's a lot of information about this that's extremely important and relevant to today. If you go back to March of 2008, we've talked about this, folks, before, but this is so relevant to today. The U.S. State Department, they launched an investigation of improper computer access to the passport records of Barack Hussein Obama. And a few days later, of Hillary, Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, and then John McCain, an equal opportunity hack, I might add. Now, the investigation centered on one person, one employee, is a contract worker for a company. You want to know the head of the company? Can you guess the name of the head of the company? Anyone? The guy that sits as head of the CIA today. The Muslim John Ofer Ohamed Brennan. At the time, he was the national, well, he was a campaign advisor on security issues, who later became assistant to the president, deputy national security advisor for homeland security and counterterrorism. And then, of course, but bing, he's head of the CIA. So March of 08, the State Department, they're looking at this investigation of improper computer access. And this is under the Bush administration, the passport records of Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoro. But here's the key to this. Well, before I get into the key, a month later, a key witness in the case was murdered. And of course, that's Lieutenant Quarles Harris. He was shot in the head in his car in front of his church. All right. And of course, gang related, you know, things happen like this. But here's the key. Here's the important part of this. The passport records contain information about Obama's travels. All right. In fact, this particular case caused Obama to admit that he traveled to Pakistan. To Pakistan in 80-81. It was not until this particular murder that Obama admitted that he traveled to Pakistan. Now, if you look at, to even today, there's been no new information on this case. The murder case is not being pursued. The State Department breach, or the breach of the passport records, not being further pursued. Now, Harris told federal investigators before he was gunned down, murdered, that he had received passport information from a co-conspirator who actually worked for the U.S. Department of State. And now crickets, nothing. We have heard nothing. You see, this was all about purging, expunging the real information about who Barack Hussein Obama really is, his travels. You know, because there's no way to tell what might have been done to Obama's passport records by those who accessed them. Key information could have been, and most likely was, altered or destroyed. And as I said, it was on April 2nd, or April 8th, 2008, when the breach became public. Obama confessed to having taken a trip to Pakistan. Up until then, he would not say a word. He did not say a word. at that point, he said, yeah, I when I was in college, I took a trip to Pakistan. And Jake Tapper was caught off guard when he sent this. He wasn't even asked the question. He was told about the passport office break-in. And then, without being prompted, Obama, in a spontaneous utterance, said, oh, yeah, oh, by the way, I should tell you, I got foreign policy experience. I traveled to Pakistan when I was in college. During a time, I should add, when U.S. citizens were not permitted to travel to Pakistan. But, oh, no, that's just nonsense, according to those people who want to poo-poo this information. You see, in at least in my opinion, things that happened in 2008 are just as relevant in 2016, 8 years later, because you have the same players minus the dead people. It should be noted that John Brennan has talked about the beauty of jihad and done so in Arabic, I might add. There's a lot here. There's a lot here to this. Lieutenant Quarles Harris. And the media comes out and pretends journalistic integrity, but they refuse to ask legitimate questions. A man is gone. He's dead. That's Harris. He's not innocent necessarily. He was trying to cut a deal. He was about to identify some co-conspirator inside the State Department. He was about to reveal what he knew specifically about the passport breach. Don't forget, Harris worked for a security firm run by John O. Brennan. There you have it. But see, you've got, in this case, you've got Quarles Harris, Lieutenant Quarles Harris, again, name, not a rank, breaking in to the passport office and really having a lot of information that could have brought down Barack Hussein Obama and even Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, the yak. But we hear nothing about it.
And there are literally hundreds of names and profiles we could go through of people that have died suspicious deaths.
We've had people on our country, on our program.
Yeah, yes. SEAL Team 6 to, you know, other people with very close ties to the Clintons, to the Obamas, to the whole political machine inside of Washington. And I would just urge people for, you know, if you really want to dig deep into this, there is a lot out there. Clinton Body Count, the Clinton Chronicles. You can find videos on YouTube. You can find books and bookstores.
But be careful. Be careful, though, right, Joe? I mean, you got to be careful who you believe, right? I mean,
well, do your research.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Understand that a lot of these cases of these suspicious deaths, you know, some are suspicious, some are, I believe, you know, murders that have been covered up.
Wait a second. You mentioned like SEAL Team 6. Do we have that clip at the ready of Charles Strange on our program? Can you pop that in? Because I think this would be a good time because... No? Didn't they give that to you? Yakety yak. Don't talk back. Come on now. I did give that to you. Oh, I did. Yeah, yeah, it's there. It's
How long
there.
Is it?
It's about 3 minutes, right? Right. Let's go to, yeah. All right, let's go to the first one. Folks, and Joe, the reason I did this last week because
yeah,
it was the
I
anniversary
these.
For Extortion 17. But let's go to clip one, the three. That'll take us. Okay, folks, listen to Charles Strange talking about his son, SEAL Team 6, Extortion 17, right now.
Well, Mr. Strange, I've spent the last year following this. No, the last year and a half, actually, following the ordeal of SEAL Team 6. Well, why don't you just start right from the beginning? Tell us about your son, first of all. Tell us about Michael. Tell us about your visit with him when he came home after the Bin Laden raid and his birthday, and what transpired there?
The whole team, all 22 of the special op guys, were home in June. That was their leave. When Michael came home, he came over, and him and his brother and their girlfriends, and we were talking and thing, and he went up to the bar up the street. He called me up. He's like, come on up, and I'm feeding shots at Jameson's, and I was messing with him, like, yo, I called him a James Bond guy, you know, and I knew he did a lot of secret squirrel stuff, and he grabbed me by the bicep. He said, Dad, I got a will, and I'm like, left this, this, and this. I said, what's going on? He said, Dad, I'm not effing around. Saturday morning, we had a big party for him at his friend's house, big pool and all, and me and him took a walk by ourselves, and he grabbed me again, and he started talking about the will. And he wouldn't see, just said, look, Dad, there's a lot going on. Somebody's leaking something. Something's going on with the team. And he did it a third time. Last time I seen him. That hurt, man. That hurt.
Oh, man.
And we kissed. And we kissed. We always kissed each other on the cheek and hugged each other no matter where he was, you know, whatever he was doing. I told him that when he was young. And that was the last time I seen him. And then August 6th, worst day of my life, I found out my son was killed in Afghanistan in the Wardak Providence in the Tangine Valley. And then I hear from all the other parents when their sons were home in June, like nine of them changed their will. One dude who lived in Virginia, you know, they all lived in Virginia. They had to be so far from the base they couldn't be no longer than 20 minutes from the base. The one guy made everybody in his family come down and see him, even his grandmom. He never did that before. Another guy told his family, I don't know if I'm going to make it back from this one. Another guy told his dad, don't drink all the beer. That's what he used to say, don't drink all the beer. Dad, this time, grabs his dad by the shoulders and tells him how much he loves him and thank you for the way you raised me. They all knew somebody was leaking something. Yeah. Michael's a cryptologist. We didn't know he was that smart. He really took off in the military. They put him right, you know, once he got through boot camp, Pensacola, Florida, and then right to Hawaii with the SEAL team over there and under the pineapple fields over there. But that's a whole nother story. But he could, they would give him newspapers from New York, Boston, Texas, Chicago, and he could go through our newspapers and see what terrorists were sending here to their jihadis here in this country.
Well, Mr. Stranger, I've spent a lot.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report